E.L. Doctorow is our guest here on The Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell was talking about an historian friend of ours, and I'm thinking about a psychologist who I wouldn't call a friend, but an acquaintance of whom I am very fond. James Hillman talks, who is a great Jungian analyst, talks about the postmodern condition, really, is what he's talking about. But he says of the individual, that we are like a boarding house. Every individual is a boarding house with many rooms, and sometimes the characters in the rooms never meet each other, and some come up at night, and some are drunks, and some are prudes, and all of humanity lives within our own characters. And I kept wondering, as I was reading The March, your latest novel, what in the world goes on in your head that is so busy with all of these people who have come to live in your head over now 40 years of writing novels? It must be very crowded in there.
Well, maybe it is. I haven't thought of it that way. I think of them as a repertory company, basically. And from book to book, I put different costumes on them and give them different names and different roles, but they're my actors. They're there. And they're good, reliable performers for me. So I value them in their presence. The fact of the matter is that in the experience of writing, these people do appear whole, and they have their names, and they have their behavior, and their role in the situation you're writing about. And only later do you realize, oh, that's the actor from Billy Bathgate, or that's the fellow who played in the Book of Daniel, this role, and so on. But no, nobody knows that except me.
Do they have, forgive me, this is sounding awfully Jungian, but are they archetypes? Do you have a hero and a damsel in distress and a, do they have that kind of character and then step forward, or do you just recognize them?
Well, it all happens at an unconscious level. They're kind of freewheeling and independent actors who show up for books as they choose.
Were they with you when you were young? Did you know these?
They might have been. There are a couple of books I have written about a mad grandmother. And that's a little bit autobiographical. But most of them, I would have to really think about to find out where they came from.
Well, I'm wondering about, don't think about it too much, because they might say bye-bye. I'm wondering about it because people talk about their imaginary friends and they try to keep kids from getting too wrapped up in their imaginary friends. And yet I think that those imaginary friends may be your best friends and they're most reliable and you know they're not going to desert you over time and that they give you a way to figure out what life is about.
Well, you can call them archetypes, or you can call them friends, or you can call them your repertory company. Basically, it's all a ventriloquial act. You're the ventriloquist, and you're throwing your voice in different directions. And you're performing, basically, when you write, I think.
Have you been listening real hard that you know how they speak?
Well, you know, when you begin writing, you learn a lot about writing. You know a lot about the craft. You make a point of that. And after a while, all that disappears. And now I know nothing about writing. I just do it. So I may be the last person in the world to
doesn't think about it.
This is a good thing.
We have a friend, a colleague, who says that to do something at a professional level, and he's talking specifically about musicians, that it takes about 10,000 to 12,000 hours of practice,
it's
rehearsal.
Tuning the brain.
You know, just getting the all the muscle memory and the reflexes and the, you know, just sort of clearing and rearranging the physical and I think the mental part of the system.
Well, and developing the neuronal paths is what he's about.
And thinking of jazz is improvisational, but it's improvisation based on stunning expertise. And it, in a way, that sounds like what you're describing.
Yeah,
both of those.
Yeah, that's a good analogy, I think. That's a good analogy. I mean, the last people in the world who can tell you about creativity are the, the artists of any medium. I know some brilliant, highly well-known musicians who are almost inarticulate talking about what they do. Painters, for the most part, are pretty stumble about a lot, although there are exceptions to But the answers that you get from psychologists or aestheticians or something like that, but not from people like me.
Who are doing the work. Well, I think about that because sometimes one can just stand back in awe at a really great waiter, waitress, whatever, or a really fine plumber. That sense of being the ultimate best that one can be. You have to start from somewhere. Were you that little boy who was scribbling all the time and said, "Oh, I can do this," as you said before, "I can do this, I can do this, I can do this"?
Yeah, Henry James used to hear the stories. He would recognize, he'd go to dinner parties and someone would tell a tale, and that's for me. The sense of possessiveness immediately establishes itself. And but that too is mysterious. Every one of the books that I've done has almost come out of some sort of creative accident or some situation I've been in. When I was a young writer, I was working for a motion picture company as a reader in the 1950s and late 50s. In those days, Westerns were very popular, and I had to read these lousy Westerns. I would write a synopsis and then send in my august opinions to whether a movie should be made. And it was really pretty sickening, and I started one day to write a parody of all these bad Westerns. And it was a story, and I showed it to the man I was working for, the story editor. And he said, "This is good. You ought to turn it into a novel." Well, I didn't know how to do that, so I crossed off the title of the story and just wrote chapter one. And then I just continued from there. And I said to myself, "I can lie about the West better than these people I've been reading." And after a while, I became serious about it. And if there is a parody in Welcome to Hard Times, it's a structural parody. I got to thinking I can use disreputable materials and make something better out of them. So that's how that book got to be. It was a complete, I mean, if I hadn't been working for that company, that book wouldn't have been written. Some other book would have been written, but that's the way these things go.
Why did you say write a novel, turn it into a novel rather than a movie, since you were in the movie business?
Well, this was the so-called story department. It was our job to cover.
You didn't do movies, you did stories.
No, you know, the film companies still do this.
Yeah.
They read everything. In fact, some of the best readers in the country are in Hollywood. Well, when I was reading, we worked out of New York. And there was competition among the film studios to get to hot galleys first. And so there was this cadre of story people who did synopses and sent them up to the executive's office. The executives either were too busy to read or perhaps couldn't read, these movie guys. So that I did that for 3 years. It was actually a very good apprenticeship to see how much bad stuff was published. It was very encouraging.
Gives you hope, doesn't it? Totally different subject, almost totally different subject. Shortly after 9/11, 2001, we were with a group of friends who were fairly active politically, fairly progressive, and we're, of course, discussing the events. And someone started to say something and then said, "But I can't say that now." And I said, "You have no choice. If that's what you believe, and the fact that it's contrary to what's being said in the world around you shouldn't stop you. And, in fact, it provides a more compelling reason to do it." And one of the things that I found charming about your books over the years is that you have been willing to say both in your books but also in your personal presentations, in your life, things that some people didn't want to say. And some people have criticized you and criticized you harshly, and probably in the 50s they would have blacklisted you. But it seems to me that that is an important role a role that needs to be performed by someone. It's not every artist or every novelist responsibility, but that role is absolutely essential if we're going to survive.
So that I do not have to interrupt, let me interrupt. This is E.L. Doctorow, to whom Bill Russell is directing that question. The three of us will be back in just a moment. We hope you'll be with us.